Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things in your world now that you're back on the hallowed ground of the United States of America?
Well, I am doing really well. I feel well rested, and I may very well hit a brick wall about 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon, but I'm feeling real well rested after my trip back, and I had a blast.
And where'd you go?
I went to the UK and talked to some folks about putting some studios up in London and Manchester. And now that I'm back, we may do something in Birmingham as well. Not Birmingham.
That's different.
Birmingham. That's right. But yeah, shout out to those folks. I wanted to specifically mention Nick Royal with London Partners and Rebecca and Rose out at in Manchester. They were they just did a fabulous job. Helping us get our arms around what that market promises for us out there. And I'm very excited about getting some studios up and running out there.
Cool. Can't wait to hear the whole story. You just got back in town yesterday, right?
Yeah, I just got back in last night, and I still have all my notes, and I even have some tokens. Not, they wouldn't be tokens. There's actually real money from riding the tube. Have you ever been?
No.
So you got to go for the next trip, and we really get things set up. You can get everywhere on the tube.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You got to mind the gap, though. There's like this little space between the train and the platform.
And you got to jump over it?
Well, and every time you get off, the lady says in a very nice British voice that I'm not going to be able to replicate, mind the gap, mind the gap. So it was a blast, but I'm glad to be back. We've got an exciting lineup of shows all week. But this one I've been looking forward to for some time here on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning. We have a couple of people we're going to visit with a little bit later in the program. We're going to have a chance to visit with Andy Lowe with Renegade Concepts. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from Broadway Across America, Atlanta, Mr. Russ Bellin. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Stone and Lee. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you, man. Now, I intended to catch a show when I was in the UK last week. We did not do it. But there's plenty to see right here in Atlanta, right?
Atlanta's got the premier shows. You know, it's the West End would have been an awesome place to see a show. A lot of the best shows originate out of the West End. But we have 5 shows coming to Atlanta this year that are currently on Broadway. So you can catch the best of Broadway here in Atlanta.
That's good to know.
So what are the 5 shows?
Well, part of our season, the 5 shows are How the Grinch Stole Christmas in November, followed by Memphis, Billy Elliot, Les Mis, and Jersey Boys. That's the 5 shows in our season. Currently, right now, if you wanted to go see a show at the Fox, you'd go see Wicked playing through October 8th, followed by Mamma Mia. So pretty much everyone in Atlanta has already seen Wicked. It's going very well, so hopefully we'll see maybe you guys out there before the end of the run.
Now, how do you choose what shows make it to Atlanta?
That's a great question. There's a lot of surveys and preparation going into that, because as part of Broadway,
do you pick?
I do pick. I have a say. I don't have
Russ gets to choose.
Russ picks.
I don't have the final say. It's a whole team of an effort. But Broadway Across America, we're the largest presenter of Broadway in the U.S. We have 35 markets, so a lot of the producers will come to us first. So that's a good place to be. So we do a lot of surveys to see what's gonna work coming out of New York. And we'll try to slot those shows in first. So Atlanta, being a top 10 market, has a great shot at getting those first-run hits like Memphis, Billy Elliot, as soon as they come out of the gates. So we'll work with our team in New York and the 35 markets, kind of slot out everything to make sure we're building a season that's going to be impactful for Atlanta.
So Billy Elliot, I got to believe that's not has nothing to do with NASCAR, though, does it? It's not Bill Elliot.
No, I don't think it's the same.
Though in Atlanta, I'm sure we're going to get that question.
You're going to get some less than svelte rednecks showing up for
I don't
Billy
understand. Where's the track?
Right. I can't hear a thing. But Wicked is still playing.
Wicked's still playing through October 8th. It's doing very well. You know, it's
Wicked is the Cats of this generation, isn't it?
It's bigger than Cats.
Bigger than Cats.
You know,
really?
It's... You know, I look at it, what, Phantom, Les Mis, Wicked, you know, those are the megas is what we kind of call them. But Wicked might be the biggest mega of them all. I mean, it's going to do 4 weeks, basically entirely sold out. It's opened in 2003, so it's still really hot, but it's just a phenomenon, you know. And it's kind of a good good place to be if you're them. You know, it's a you don't have to work as hard. I don't like to say that, but you know, this is something the public wants. You know, you just kind of have to build it, and they will come with Wicked, and it's a good thing. But rightfully so, they deserve it. They put together an amazing show. The music's amazing, the casting, the set, everything, you know. So when the audience goes, they're going to really get something out of it. It is a kind of an experience that everyone needs to partake. So, you know, hats off to Wicked, but, you know, we're the beneficiary here.
Yeah. So in your operation, are you always working in the same venue or the same venues in Atlanta, or do you bounce around and your thing is really about the show?
Broadway Across America, which is now actually the Fifth Third Bank Broadway in Atlanta series, only is presented at the Fox.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we've dabbled at presenting at the Cobb a few years ago, but we really streamlined our business to focus on the Fox. The Fox is the premier venue in Atlanta. So, you know, we feel like that's the appropriate place to play our shows.
Now, how different is seeing Wicked in the Fox as it is if you actually saw it on Broadway?
To many, there's no difference. In to a lot, the Fox is better. You know, the cast on Broadway is going to be different from the national touring, but when Wicked or any show builds those casts for touring, they do it in a certain way that it replicates what's on in New York. So for a lot, people go to the Fox, and the magic of the Fox is better than some of the theaters in New York. So I think it's the same, if not better, for some. You know, it's all kind of down to personal preference, but I talk to a lot of people that prefer seeing shows at the Fox than in New York.
Okay, so let's get a little bit of consult. Let's get some tips for those of us who might be a little more accustomed to the minor league baseball game or the NASCAR trip. What are some tips for enjoying the theater with your family? How would you organize that? Do you always have to get the best seats, or is there a way to enjoy it on a more modest budget, you think?
It's a great question, and that's something we're going through right now with our branding, because, you know, we consider ourselves a luxury brand, but we want to make sure we are we're available for everyone. So there's a lot of different ways to enjoy it. You know, that there isn't a bad seat in the house, but the ideal way for me would be to buy early. You got to buy early. If you become a season subscriber, you're going to get the 20% savings. You'll get the best seats. But if you can't do that, you sign up for our e-club, you get the best seats, you buy early, lock it down. Then you want to get to the show early. There's awesome restaurants around the Fox. So, you know, when you're going to experience something like this, you want to kind of build it into an overall experience and get that value. So maybe you want to get down there early, maybe go to Gordon Beerch. It's family friendly. They have free parking if you eat there before the show. It's about 3 blocks from the Fox. So you get down there, have a nice dinner at Gordon Beerch, and then walk over to the Fox. Try to get there maybe a half hour, 45 minutes before the show starts, because you want to take in the Fox. It's got a lot of history, you know, from it had to be saved 30 years ago. They have that information that you can read about in the Fox. You can walk into it. And if you've ever been to the Fox, the whole skyline, it's this Egyptian theme, but the skyline has stars and clouds and it's really detail oriented. So if you go, you want to get there early, let your family absorb all that as well. So for me, the tips are buy early, you'll get the best seats, and then plan ahead, make it a whole experience versus just trying to show up for a show.
Now, if you have season tickets, those are all the good seats, right? I can't just show up the day of the show and go, hey, I want third row center.
That definitely will not happen.
Not at Wicked, anyway.
Definitely not at Wicked. You know,
I mean, unless I call you.
You can call me. You'll get good seats.
This is a non-issue for you and I. We've had to go on the show.
For regular people.
You know, for regular folks out there.
Correct, yes. Is
there, like in New York, or my point is, in New York, there's places you can go, and at the last minute, you can get, you know, people turn back in their seats, and you can get good seats in Broadway. Does that same dynamic happen
here? We actually do have a partnership with Atlanta Tickets for some shows. Not for Wicked, but maybe for Memphis. We may release a few seats at 50% off day of show. But it's hit
or miss.
That's
a dice roll, right?
That's a dice roll.
You don't want to gamble on that. Not if you've told your wife we're going to Wicked. You don't want to do that. Oh, right. I'll just snatch a couple of tickets at lunch. Not a good play.
No, that's not going to happen. No, the best way to get the best seats is through the subscribers. And they've worked really hard. You know, we have subscribers that we've been 27 years in Atlanta. They've probably been 27 years. And now they've worked their way all the way up to row A. You know, what we do is every year you buy a subscription, then the next year when you go to renew, as people drop off or whatever, you get bumped up. And it's kind of a game. And the old timers, I guess I'd say,
they're winning.
They're winning. They covet those seats, right. They don't give them up for anything.
It's like trying to get on Augusta, right?
Right.
That's funny. Now, do you guys do theater, your family, much?
Actually, my wife and kid go.
Yeah?
And they go usually one play a year. My sister-in-law has season tickets. So she goes, her and her son is into theater, so they go, on that list, and they get the good seats, and they...
I wonder if Uncle Rock, I really do have an uncle named Rock, by the way, and my name is Stone, but I wonder if he doesn't have season tickets, because I think he goes a lot. You mentioned Les Mis. I mean, I know he hits, I'm almost certain they've been to Wicked.
But, like, when you have these plays that come every year or come regularly, how is that for the season ticket holder to see the same play over and over? They're all right with that?
It's a good question. I mean, No, they want to get that fresh. But however, you look at the megas, like Jersey Boys we're going through right now. So what we'll actually do for the subscribers is we will count that as an opt-out. You know, it was here in 2009. Granted, it's the music of Frankie Valli. It's a concert. It's just a good time. I think 90% of the people just rebought it. 10% said, you know what, I saw in 2009. I don't want to see it again. And we're okay with that. We kind of let them opt out. We'll either give them, you know, if they bought two tickets, they can get four tickets to Les Mis. Or they'll just take four shows versus five. So we try to be flexible. In our industry, that's obviously a challenge because when you look at the megas, the Jersey Boys, the Wickeds, the Les Mis, you want to put those through every 3 or 4 years.
Right.
So because the single ticket purchase is also a big part of our business, but you know you have to consider
you
the
gotta
subscribers.
Balance that. So a season ticket isn't necessarily every single show. Is that right? There's different plans?
Correct. Well, it's really the five shows in the season and then the two season specials. So Wicked and Mamma Mia, people can add those on. And when they add on, they're getting to buy tickets before they go on sale to the public. They're going to get the best seats. But it's typically a five-show package. We do occasionally we'll run specials around the holidays. For example, we'll probably do a four-show package and things like that. But typically we try to stick to our five shows.
Now, you mentioned earlier Fifth Third Bank, which is always, I know who this is because I have a cousin-in-law who works for them. It always seemed like the oddest name, Fifth Third.
Yeah.
But they're a major sponsor of a certain show or of Broadway Across America. Or how's that work?
Yeah, we're excited to announce Fifth Third Bank is now our presenting sponsor. So this series moving forward and for our branding for everything is going to be the Fifth Third Bank Broadway in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
So they are, for the next 3 years, they will present our season. It's a great partnership. Fifth Third Bank is according to Bloomberg, the seventh strongest bank in the world. They are
so Fifth Third is seventh.
Seventh.
This is getting
Fifth Third is
yeah,
seventh.
It's a lot of numbers.
Confusing.
But they have this real local feel. So you know they want to enrich the community, and that's why they kind of came to us, and we came to them. And you know we're part of the arts. We want to enrich the community, and it was a great. Is a great fit for us. So we're working with them on other items like their partnership with United Way. So we're going to develop some other programs to how we can help them get in the United Way. If it's ticket donations, special programs with some of the United Way organizations to help people who haven't had the chance to experience Broadway, do that through Fifth Third and our partnership. So we're really excited to have them on board.
Now, we have a lot of guests that try to get sponsors. Can you share some insight on how you were able to kind of get that?
Sponsorship's tough. You know, it's not what it was a few years ago. It's taken this one maybe 2 years of constant contact. However, what this one grew out of was Cincinnati and Columbus. Our Fifth Third Bank is already the sponsor there. They came to Atlanta in 2008. We started talking to them right away in 2008. Obviously, at that point, they weren't ready, but we kept the conversations going, listening to what they really want, and they finally got to the point where, you know, they got to jump in. They want to be part of this community, and we were kind of that platform. But the biggest part, I would say, is what helped the team sell it was the success they've had in Cincinnati and Columbus, you know, delivering, over-delivering on what the sponsors' expectations were. You know, when listening to what they wanted. In Columbus, it's been 25 years of partnership.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, when I think of sponsorships, I don't know, Winston Cup went to Nextel to whatever. I mean, things don't last 25 years, but, you know, what our team did was listen to their needs and adjust over those 25 years, and they did a great job, and now we're going to get to do that in Atlanta. So we had a meeting. We went to lunch with them last week, kind of got their bucket list of what they want to see, and we'll continue to change the partnership so we make sure their goals are met. It's great timing for us because, you know, we were Broadway Across America. We're going to totally rebrand everything Fifth Third Bank Broadway in Atlanta. Our website is broadwayinatlanta.com now. So we're kind of going to jump in together and make us continue to make us the premier presenter of Broadway in Atlanta.
Now, what is your value proposition to them? Like, what are they? I mean, they get affiliated with Broadway and Atlanta, and there's tickets. But what? How is that a win for a bank?
For them, well, their primary business is business, corporate, wealth management, mortgages. We have, you know, we're a luxury brand, so our household income is over 100,000. So our clientele is very.
So it's their clientele as well?
It's their clientele is what it is. They want to be able to talk to these clients, you know, so they're tagged and all that. When we're out there advertising, we have a big advertising budget. It's going to be their logo in the community talking to the people they want to talk to because they obviously, yeah, they have goals to be able to manage these people's money.
Right, they want to penetrate this market, right, because they're competing with a lot of big names and a lot of southern banks that have been around for a while here.
Exactly. So, and I think we're positioned to do that for them.
Yeah, the breakthrough, the good old boy network with the right. Wicked, right? I like it. I like the strategy. So are there opportunities for smaller firms to also capitalize on this in some way? Are there other levels of sponsorship or some kind of involvement that a smaller firm might get?
That's a great question. Yes, we can build packages for any level. You know, we have, if someone wanted to come in and just sponsor the Grinch, you know, if it was some type of family business that want to drive people to their stores, then we could partner with them on just a show like Grinch, or if it's Memphis, we could, you know, if they just want to be on our advertising or they want to have access to our database, we can have special offers, promotions. You know, we're partnering, for example, and this is like a more just a promotion, but with a Lasix company. So, you know, during the month, I think of November, if they buy a Lasix, they're going to get 4 free tickets to Grinch. So, you know, that's more of a promotion, but we can build up from there. So we kind of we try to be very friendly and build to the sponsors' needs.
So your business is built on ticket sales, but it's also built in sponsorship as well. Those are the two main revenue streams for you?
Sponsorship is a big part of it. For me, subscriptions is really what our business is about. You know, we want to sell those subscriptions. You know, we bring the shows in.
Subscriptions are season tickets?
Season tickets.
Right.
That's the goal for my position and my team is to sell those first, then the single tickets. The single tickets then hopefully will lead to subscription because we want to introduce people to the theater and get them engaged. But subscriptions is where it's at.
Now well, and then there's appearance fees for Russ, you know, right, to appear on media like this. Yeah, I bet he commands a pretty penny.
Yes, he's you could tell he's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, right.
Now, when somebody gets a season ticket, is it a couple typically or is it a family? What is your profile of a season ticket holder?
Two is the average for a season ticket. It's usually a mom and pop. We just launched a new program this year, our corporate club. You know, we look at the Braves and the Hawks who have season tickets, suites, and all that type of stuff. And we feel like there's a need for entertaining clients. Broadway should be a part of that. You know, a lot of times, you know, I hear from people who have to entertain the clients. The wife wants to do something. She might not want to go to a Braves game or Hawks game. So, you know, we're trying to get those businesses to end up with 2 or 4 tickets with a parking, be able to send their clients, maybe come down with them, have a nice dinner around the Fox, and then enjoy a show with some clients. So,
is there space in the Fox to have kind of impromptu little networking?
There is. That's definitely part of the corporate club program as well. So if someone contacts us, we can help connect them with the Fox. The Fox has some great meeting space from holding, I think, 500 people to 20 people. It's really flexible. So, yeah, if they wanted to entertain 20 clients, we can help them make that happen.
Now, you came on our radar, actually, because of your relationship with Brave Public Relations. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that relationship a little bit? What compelled you guys to go with a professional PR firm, and how's that working out so far?
It's been great. Brave, it's been about 5 years now. We used to do it in-house, but, you know, when you look at cities as big as Atlanta and who you need to know, we had to find someone that actually could kind of do that for us. And Brave has outstanding relationships in entertainment, some retail partnerships. So it was kind of a win-win for us. We were able to partner with them. They introduced us to other clients. They have the great relationships with the media as well as on the up and coming, I guess, marketing side of it, the social media, the bloggers. You know, we love to get in there with the mom bloggers and provide information through that, and they have great relationships with them as well. So Brave PR, you know, full service agency, and they've really been able to meet our needs. So it's been great.
So social media blogging, I didn't think about that, but I guess that's probably had a real impact on your entire industry, hasn't it?
For sure. And for anything with entertainment, you know, I think you got to be part of it. People want to know, learn about things from people they trust, you know? So we try to invite some of these key influencers out to opening night, let them see the show for themselves, and then they can go back and talk about it. And I think for me, that's one of the most impactful ways to sell tickets, that word of mouth. You know, for a show like Memphis, for example, that's coming up, you know, I've seen it in New York, and I can tell people about it. It's a show you don't want to miss, but they're going to really want to hear it from someone that they know personally. So we'll probably invite some of those key influencers out to a premiere event in November to preview Memphis, and they'll be floored. It's an amazing show, and then they're going to go back in on their blogs, and from there, people, I think, will be more inclined to buy tickets.
It's a brave new world out there on promoting,
right.
And that's really cool. Well, listen, before we let you go, mm-hmm. let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you or know about some upcoming shows and that kind of thing. Let's make sure we get your coordinates.
Okay. To find out any information about Broadway, of the Fifth Third Bank Broadway in Atlanta series, you'd go to broadwayinatlanta.com. We present our shows at the Fox. Currently right now is Wicked through October 8th, and our next show is Mamma Mia November 2nd through the 6th. But again, you can find any information you need at broadwayinatlanta.com.
Well, Russ Bellin with Fifth Third Bank Broadway across America. Broadway in Atlanta. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you'll come back sometime. And I don't know, maybe bring one of those bloggers with you and we could get their perspective too sometime.
That'd be fun. Let's do that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning from Renegade Concepts is Mr. Andy Lowe. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm doing well, but that's a hard act to follow. I don't know. You still want to do this?
Hey, I'm going to take my chances. I like the high-pressure situation.
Absolutely. I love the name of your company, and for that reason alone, I would have made sure that you had an opportunity to be on the show. But tell us about Renegade Concepts.
Well, Renegade Concepts, talking about the name of the company and how we came up with it, it's really in the tagline, which is breaking the rules of conventional thinking. And Renegade is really somebody who tends to operate a little bit outside of the conventional norms, and Concepts is about ideas and thinking. So it really just, the name fit in line with what we do, which is getting out in the business world and finding out what is it that we can do to improve a business. And when you think of conventional thinking, you're normally thinking of traditional lines of thought process, specifically if you think linear thinking or straight line, where direction creates thought process. You have companies that have done things a certain way for as long as they've been in existence, and they really don't look at how the marketplace may have changed, how the dynamics are different. They're not measuring responses, so they continue to throw efforts and dollars and energies behind ideas that may not be the fastest to move them forward. Whereas if you look at the fastest growing businesses out there, the ones that are really getting ahead, even in traditional types of business, they're the innovators. They're the ones who are doing things differently. They're embracing the marketplace where they are, and they understand the needs and desires of their audience and how they find and gather information.
That's not the first time he's answered that question.
I think he's practiced that.
Well, no, I found that very articulate. So the kinds of clients that you typically have, do you specialize in an industry or a particular profile of an ideal client in your situation?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot because, again, if you think about conventional thought, most people believe that in order to help someone consulting or advisory-wise in their business, you need to be an expert in their particular industry. The truth is I work with a variety of industries because I don't really focus on what I would consider to be the content of the business. For example, if you notice you have a coffee mug in front of you, if you think about that, there are two parts to that mug. There's the content, which is what's inside of the mug, or what's inside of a business, and there's the context, what's holding that together. And my advisory services specialize around the context of a business. So it doesn't matter what you put inside of the business. It could be anything from, I've worked with financial companies, I've worked with retail organizations, I've worked with restaurants, I've worked with industrial or manufacturing. But there is a context that binds these businesses into performance. They all want to make money. They all have to provide a service or a product. You know, when you look at what the context of the business is, you can find processes and systems that we can leverage and utilize to increase the performance of that company.
Now, is there any mistake you see that people just make right off that's like a no-brainer, and then you can't believe they keep making that same mistake?
Well, that in itself is a mistake. Just the fact that people do keep making the same mistakes. Probably the quickest one that I could tell you is the idea around right and wrong. When you look at businesses, very quickly, people try to take their business and determine things as right or wrong inside of the company. And I think that if you really look at performance-wise, all we're interested in is, does it work or does it not work? It really doesn't matter if it's widely accepted. It doesn't matter if it's the social norm. It's just a question of, does it work inside of the business? I mean, for my value, if it makes money and it makes your business better, it works. Let's go with that. Who cares if traditionally it's the widely accepted way of doing things?
And so how did you fall into this line of work? You presumably did not come out of university and decide to open Renegade Concepts. What led you down this path?
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't offer degrees in this type of thinking, so you kind of have to get the street knowledge of it. I've always been a nonlinear thinker, somebody who just always questioned the norm and wanted to understand how and why, and I've kind of kept that toddler approach to things my whole life. I think they're the most innovative people out there are the toddlers, because they just want to know why, and because I said so is never a good answer, right? But anyway, I studied finance. I went through the financial markets, followed the technology trail into sales, and spent a great deal of time working with technologies and startups, and just found that there was a real need for companies to have someone guiding them. People know how to do what they do, but they only see it from the perspective of inside of the company. If you think about it in a sports analogy, it's like a quarterback. He sees the same game as the offensive coordinator, but from a much different point of view. You know, when you got a defensive end blitzing in on you and double coverage and things of that nature, you right. Obviously are seeing a very different game than the guy in the booth who can see the whole field and the things that you might be missing.
It's like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until somebody hits you in the face.
That is very true.
And so your industry strikes me, and actually, candidly, I've had a little bit of experience in the general training and consulting arena, but your work strikes me as a very crowded marketplace, very competitive. How do you break through the clutter? How do you go to market?
You're very right. It is a crowded space for a number of reasons, and sadly, it's a crowded space with a lot of unqualified people.
Yeah, but some of us have gotten out, and we started doing other things.
And we appreciate that. No, but it is. You know, you get some people that have read a book and decide, you know, hey, suddenly I know how to implement this.
Now they don't even have
to
read books. They just have to read a blog.
Or listen on audio. You're right. MP3s. But the point is that in the industry, you do need a way to separate. And what I found is that the typical coaching consulting market creates somewhat of a conflict of interest in my mind. We have some people out there that bill hourly for their services. And if I'm billing you hourly for services, in my mind, that's a real conflict, because you want me to do the job as quickly as possible, and I want to take as long as possible. If we do project basis, where that I'm charging you a flat fee, again, your hope is that I do it as thoroughly as possible. My job, since I'm flat fee, is to get it done as quickly as possible. If we go to a model where we say, all right, let's look at this thing at a performance base, then we get more into a mutual shared interest, where if I can create revenue growth in your company and I can create a revenue share based on the performance, then your interest is that we succeed. My interest is that we succeed. And that's what I really do different. Everything I do, I base on performance. If I don't create money inside of your company, why should you be writing me checks?
That's intriguing and there attractive to me.
Yeah, that works for you.
Do you find yourself a little extra vulnerable, though, going to market like that? Or you just have that much confidence in what you're doing? Or you wouldn't make that decision until you've had enough of a conversation to feel like you really can make an impact?
It's really about risk analysis. I mean, you can't take everybody. You can't save everyone. You can't fix every business. And, you know, truthfully, I don't look for those businesses. I look for businesses much like an investor would look for a good startup business, because I am investing. I'm investing time and resources and potential payoff down the road. So I have to make sure that the opportunities I take on, you know, are good opportunities. Some businesses, quite frankly, and this is sad to say, are better off shutting their doors.
Now, when you're working out that kind of an arrangement with somebody, how do you define what the metrics of success look like so that you both create that win-win?
Well, you know, it's really sitting down and finding out, number one, what's the goal? There has to be a clear-cut goal.
Right.
Typically, my focus is around revenues, either existing revenues, which is easy to define, or we start to talk about additional revenues inside of the business. Many times, there are places that a company could create revenue inside of their business that's complementary to the efforts that they're already taking on. They're just not taking advantage of.
Right. Now, but how, when you're saying this new revenue, are you saying, okay, anything that flows from this new revenue stream that we're creating together, that there's some sort of a revenue share based on that? Is that how it typically
Correct.
Works?
From a new revenue stream, it's easy because you're going from zero to something.
Right.
When you're talking about increasing existing revenue, you really also have to sit down and have a conversation about where the trend of the business and the market is. If you've got a company that you know, made $1 million last year, but that's on the decline from the past 3 years, you have to be aware that they're not on target for $1 million this year. So
right.
if you bring them back at $1 million,
that's
it may
a win.
Just, yeah,
right.
it may be a win.
Right.
And so is your counsel to maybe particularly service-based businesses ever, hey, do like I do, make some of your services performance-based? Have you found yourself giving that counsel before?
Yeah, at times. I mean, the thing that really is important is that you go in with an open mind because it's about finding a solution that works. Remember, not right versus wrong. I don't go in with my 10-step plan and go, here's the program that we need to follow. Everything that I do is customized to the client that I'm working with, and our goal is to work quickly. If you think about the way a lot of people approach business, they tend to make very slow decisions, and when they make them, they're very erratic in nature. And my focus is to make very small, quick adjustments. If we're on something that's not working, let's cut off very quick, and let's improve quickly if we see a way that we can get better. Think about it like driving down the interstate. You know, if you had your eyes just focused on the hood ornament, and as you got close to a car, you quickly yank the wheel to try to avoid a collision.
Right.
That's not a bad way to drive. Most of us, what we do is we drive down the road making small, constant adjustments to the wheel to keep the car in the lane where we want it to be.
Now, do you have a success story maybe you can share of a company you work with that you were able to take this kind of tact and help them succeed?
Sure. I mean, we could go through a number of those. Probably one of my favorites, though, it's going to go back to the technology market because I love to see technology move and grow. And, you know, I worked with a company here in Atlanta that started off at zero. It was just a concept and an idea, and we were able to pull together not only an investment pool to help these guys get some money to get started, but then we were able to take their product to market, keep them ahead of the competition because it's a market space that fills in very quickly, and then they ended up being bought by a Fortune 100 company. So if anytime you can make that kind of move, you're feeling pretty good about things at the end of the day.
So do you open the conversation talking about linear thinking versus, I don't think you would say circular, but you probably have a label for this other kind of thinking. Do you spend some time trying to get folks to think more like that before you dive into trying to solve the problems?
It's part of the process all yeah. along the way. You know, really it's just given, you can give a couple of examples and help people very quickly understand what we're talking about. Probably a mistake people make in getting the idea of nonlinear thinking. I'm sure you've heard people say, I'm an out-of-the-box thinker. Well, when you start thinking about thinking outside of the box, most people are perceiving an intellectually revolutionary concept, something no one's ever thought about before. And really, nonlinear thinking isn't about that. Breaking the rules of conventional thinking is sometimes utilizing the exact rules that are in place, just looking at them differently. Great example, yesterday, I don't know if you guys happened to catch the Falcons game. Falcons played Tampa Bay yesterday, and there was a very interesting event. In the game, Tampa Bay had dropped back to throw the ball and threw a pass. It was ruled complete on the field. But if the pass had stood as complete, it was going to be a 4-yard loss for Tampa Bay. Well, the coach challenged the ruling on the field for a completed pass. Now, traditional thought says if you get a pass ruled complete, you don't challenge
it. You're
jumping
up and down, right?
You're like, hey, we completed the pass. But he actually used the challenge rule to negate what was ruled a positive play for them because it ended up putting them back on the original line of scrimmage versus a 4-yard loss. Same rule, just a different way of looking at it, and that's really what nonlinear thinking is about.
So this is going to be incredibly rewarding work. I'd be interested to know what you feel like is some of the most rewarding parts of this work, and what do you find a little bit challenging from time to time, if not downright frustrating?
That's a great question. So, some of the challenge or the rewarding parts, let's start there, really just boils down to being able to share information and knowledge. I mean, anytime you can make someone else better, you're better as a result. And so it's a win-win. And I've always had a passion for sharing information, teaching. If I learned how to do anything, the first thing I want to do is go out and teach somebody else how to do it. And this allows me to do it in a way that not only benefits us immediately through the business, but you know, let's be honest, if you got money, then you can enjoy a lot of other things in life too. So
now, I know one of the other things you enjoy is doing triathlons. Can you talk about how that all fits into what's going on in your world?
Sure. This was relatively new for me. I'll backdate you about a year and a half ago. I found myself a little bit sluggish. I had been in the corporate sales for a while and had put on some extra weight and carried that for a number of years. And I decided, hey, maybe it's time for me to get back in shape. And so I started running, which was what I knew to do to lose weight. And talk about conventional thinking. My mindset around running was that it was punishment. You know, I grew up playing sports, and basically, you know, when you got in trouble, it was like, give me a lap.
Give me a lap, right, right.
So I perceived running as punishment, but over time, I really began to enjoy it. I started running. I did a 5K in the spring. I ended up doing the Peachtree Road Race during the summer. Signed up for the Atlanta Half Marathon in October, and it was on the journey to that process that I really started to realize the idea of how commitment and consistency that I had taught in business really played into this idea of fitness. And I decided, you know, it was kind of a perfect storm opportunity. I wanted a big goal. I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to really see if I could play out in a non-business setting some of these lessons that I had taught. And an Ironman triathlon came on my radar. I had a friend who had done one, and I had thought, you know, good for you. No way. They'll never be me. But I got the opportunity to see the progression and said, you know what, this is something I think I can take on. It's a big enough goal. I'm turning 40 in the spring of next year, and I've got a son who I really want to show what's possible. Well, he's got a lot of friends whose dads are getting old and fat. I wanted to say, hey, there's a better way.
That's great. I love it.
And so I threw my name in the hat. You pretty much have for an Ironman, you have to sign up a year in advance, and I did. I signed up for Ironman Florida, which is coming up in just under 6 weeks. Which I don't know if you guys know what an Ironman consists of, but it's a
walk us through it.
Yeah, it starts with a 2.4-mile swim. You move on to a 112-mile bike ride, and then it's followed by a 26.2-mile run. These are all back-to-back, and there's a 17-hour clock on the whole deal. So it's a pretty intense day, and I started training for it a year ago, and now we're about 6 weeks out. And I've really seen this idea of commitment and consistency come to fruition. Because some days you get up and you don't feel like training, but you do it anyway. And if you do it, your body adapts, your mind adapts, and it's amazing what we're capable of as humans if we really dedicate ourselves to it.
I think when I turn 40, maybe I'll do an Ironman.
Yeah, the second time around.
So how does one shop for a consultant? You know, a lot of us, you know, we buy cars once every 10 years. We buy consultants maybe even less frequently. If you were out in the market and looking for an edge for your business and you thought, you know what, I'd like to get an outside perspective, what kind of questions should I be asking? What kinds of things should I be looking for in a good fit for someone to guide us, you know, to the next level, you think?
Well, first and foremost, I would say you got to look at personality. Because if you can't get a personality fit with your consultant or your coach, it's going to create problems down the road. You need somebody you can listen to. I mean, if you think of a simple example, we all have mothers, right? How many times have you come home and told your mother something that you learned somewhere, and it's like the most revolutionary thing you've ever heard of, and then she looks at you and says, I've been telling you that for years. Right. It's just the wrong situation, wrong fit. Sometimes having a friend as an advisor is not a good thing because your peer-to-peer relationship is too strong and you don't want to take their advice. Sometimes you get somebody who's very shy and meek and they need a little softer hand. And sometimes people, let's be honest, need a good swift kick in the behind.
That's good advice, I think.
Yeah, there you go.
So what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you, learn more about your services, and maybe have a substantive conversation about these really important topics?
The best way is just to give me a call directly. I believe you can shop, you know, websites, you can read emails, and that's all great. But ultimately, until we sit down and talk face-to-face, we're not going to know. So I'd start it with a phone call. I can be reached at 404-909-1454, and we can have a conversation and figure out what are the challenges that you're facing. Are we a good personality fit? If so, we can move it to the next level.
Well, and given your fee structure, that's not something that you would charge an upfront fee for, doesn't sound
no,
like.
No, right? Not at all.
Wow. I feel so much more educated now than I did an hour ago.
Did that? That's yeah. Back in America. That's what we'll do for you.
I do want to give another shout out, though, to my friends in the UK. We're looking forward to getting over there. That's going to be a lot of fun. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Russ Bellin and Andy Lowe, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.